Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be continuing a conversation that we have had on a number of different occasions. We've looked at it from, you know, multiple points of view. I think in the last quarter of 2024 alone, we looked at, the area of education and technology, around the fact that firstly we spoke to one of the universities about how lecturers are making use of AI and trying to keep up, themselves and, students and all of that. We spoke to, an online school about the fact that despite having gone past COVID, some people are still wanting to learn in a purely online environment. And we've also, spoken to a team around this argument that's being had to say for young kids, if they're going to be reading and reading material, is digital reading material better than physical reading material? Obviously, they were biased and said that, physical book is going to be better. But for today, we sort of venture into the realm of what I call professional education. And when you get into certain fields, there tend to be certifications of some sort. When you get into accounting, you're either going to become a, certified public accountant if you're in the United States, a chartered accountant here in South Africa. There are chartered financial analysts. There are all these things that people do, and IT is no different. So today we're joined by the team from Cisco, and we're just going to be having a discussion around what AI has done or could potentially do, to this particular sector. We're joined by David Mallory as well as Ryan Rose. They're both from Cisco, based in the United States, and they are in charge basically of learning and certifications from a Cisco point of view. But we're going to get a sense of what it is they do, and also what AI has done. So, gentlemen, greetings to you today.
Hello.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
I think a good place to start, Dave, I'll just start with you, simply to say, Dave and I spoke the other day, and the question that I had posed to him was to say, in IT, there tends to be a lot of certifications that people have to keep up with. And one of the current debates is, well, as long as you have the right AI or AI tool, you might not necessarily have to keep up with things. But he had a different view. So maybe that can be a good jumping off point, to say, what are you seeing there? Because, you're a veteran in the space. You've been, I believe, almost 3 decades, with Cisco.
Yep. So I've been with Cisco for 27 years, but I joined the learning group November of 2003. So I'm 21 years in the learning group. So I've been doing this for quite a while. That conversation of, will something make certifications or will something make the learning obsolete or not valuable, has been going on the entire time I've been in this organization. The most recent one prior to AI was around automation. There's a lot of conversation of, oh, because you're going to automate, you don't need to know what you're doing. You don't need to be certified, right? That the automation will take care of it for you. We have a session we do at our customer conference called Cisco Live with our CEO, Chuck Robbins. And that question came up to Chuck Robbins a few years ago. And Chuck said, look, you cannot automate something that you don't understand. Okay. We need people who understand. The automation is to help us scale and to grow and to do more. It doesn't take away the need for the human who knows what they're doing. I think AI is very similar, right? AI is tremendous tools. My team, we're responsible for creating and delivering the certifications, creating the learning content. We are using AI to help us with that. but there's still a need for the knowledge, right? AI doesn't automatically give you something. You have to know what to ask for. You have to know how to make sure what you get is accurate, right? That the AI is not based on some false premise or that you get a hallucination, as they say with AI. So I think for us, the key thing with AI is it's how can it improve your job? How can it accelerate your outcomes, right? How can it help you grow? If you look at the scale of the network, and I did this for the automation, you know, back about 10 or 12 years ago, we looked at how many devices were connected to the internet when we launched the CCIE program. And we watched that scale, and it was very exponential. Yeah. And as you look at IoT, the devices, how many of us right now on my person and in my laptop bag, I have 7 devices that have IP addresses. Yeah. So how do you handle that scale? And you have to have, we're not going to exponentially grow the number of people. So how do the number of people scale to handle all of that additional connectivity, applications, and so on? Yeah. So that to me is a really important factor. The human is critical. AI is a fantastic tool, but it's a tool that the human uses.
Yeah.
All right. It's an interesting one. And I wanted to just, pick you guys' brains about, the different types of, learning that are out there. And especially because we find ourselves in a place where people are learning in different ways,
mm-hmm.
apart from the fact that, we've got this AI debate, right? So, maybe Ryan, you can give us a sense, to say right now in the Cisco ecosystem, this is what learning looks like, or the different offerings that you guys have. One of the things that I've always been curious about is to say, how do you, I think it's always challenging, coming up with a relevant curriculum. Firstly, and then secondly, making sure that whatever you are teaching to people is actually something that enterprise is actually going to need, want, and use.
Yeah. So Cisco's had its certification program for around 30 years.
Yeah.
And, when you talk about the importance of building a curriculum that is relevant, this is something that Cisco's been doing for 30 years, for 3 decades.
Yeah.
It's not something I think ever when you're dealing with learning that you build something and you say, well, we're done. Just like with journalism, the art of what building a great learning program is, the art is in the revision, mm-hmm. is in our ability to go back and update and revise and add to. Mm-hmm. And so for our program, that's not just been the materials that appear in our learning, where we use things like job task analysis, job role analysis, do a tremendous amount of research to find out, bring SMEs in to find out how job roles are changing or what job expectation, what skills are relevant to perform a task or achieve an outcome. In addition to all of that, the material that goes into the learning, what you said about the modalities, that's also something that's constantly evolving. So for Cisco, we provide a number of ways to be able to engage with training. We want to make learning incredibly accessible. So we have things that are built around just-in-time learning. When you're think about those moments when you're thinking, I just need to know how to do this one thing.
Yeah.
So we have small bits of content that people can use. We have scenario-based content, modalities, different things, whether it's like documentation or videos, podcasts, even a mixture of all of those things, plus moments or opportunities to get hands-on. We offer those things digitally via a platform that we have, Cisco U, which anyone can find on u.cisco.com, where we even have no-cost training that's available. But we also offer in-classroom experiences, boot camps, mixtures of both. So the question that you ask is great, because what makes a long-lasting, relevant program? It's keeping the materials fresh. It's always having an outside-in view. It's putting the learner as the focus, and then finding all the different modalities that allow you to meet the learner where they're at, whether they're at home, they're in the office, they're in the classroom, or they're even on their phone.
One of the things that Dave was talking about is this issue of scale. From a Cisco point of view, because, you know, huge Silicon Valley player, and I understand that the learning group has actually had a lot of students, you know, going through it around the world. Are you able to maybe give us a little bit of color around, you know, some of those numbers?
Yeah, I'll use a very specific example, right? So Ryan talked about modalities, right? You know, people have different preferences, right? Whether it's digital or in person and so on. For us, across all of it, what's key is that you get hands-on.
Yes.
You can't learn how to, you know, operate, optimize, troubleshoot a network, you know, very complex thing without hands-on activities. So we have a very large lab system that covers all of Cisco's technologies. In our current fiscal year,
yeah,
we 1.8 to 2 million times we'll have a student press a button, you know, whether it's in an instructor-led training or on our digital platform, to launch a lab, and we will spin up a network. It might be a data center network. It might be a collaboration, right? You know, a network, WebEx calling or something. It might be security based. And we'll spin it up into a known state. For example, if you need to do troubleshooting, we'll spin up a network and that has errors injected into it that you then have to troubleshoot. So we'll do that between 1.8 and 2 million times this year. So that's the kind of the scale of the students.
Yeah.
I'm going to tie it back to AI and to automation.
Yeah.
That launching 2 million labs, right, 20 years ago would be impossible. Just impossible. The team that supports that globally, because we provide 7x24 support. So I have support engineers. I have the engineers who are, you know, updating equipment as Cisco brings out new things and so on, doing security patches as flaws are discovered. It's a team of 13.
Wow.
Right.
Globally.
So it's, that's the operations, lab operations team. Then there's a lab systems team that builds the systems and tools that enables that, right? So it's overall, the lab team is larger, but it's not a large team to be able to scale to 2 million.
Yeah.
And that doesn't count the hands-on assessments that we do in our labs or our exams, the actual certifications. So there's the traditional multiple choice and so on, but there's also hands-on activities. We'll say, configure this and make sure that you know that you actually did it. So it's performance-based testing versus just, you know, memorizing, you know, data and so on. So that's another 800,000 to 900,000 labs initialized per year. So it kind of gives you an idea of the scale, right? If we talk about, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. We've issued over 2 million certifications. Some people have multiple, right? So it's not 2 million people, but it's, you know, it's over 1 million people and over 2 million certifications in our 31-year history of the certification program.
All right. One of the things I'm quite curious about is, okay, fine. Now, because everything is, we're at this point with the AI, and we've agreed that you sort of have to have foundational knowledge for you to actually use the AI the best, or to, you know, you need the people that can program the AI and, you know, validate it, you know, all of this stuff. What type of feedback, if at all, are you guys getting from learners around AI? Do they feel like it's something that helps their learning? Do they feel like it's something that is maybe like a crutch? What type of discussions what type of feedback are you guys getting from, you know, perhaps from actual learners around this AI debate?
Well, I would say the first thing is, you know, AI is vast. Yeah. Like it's possibilities and its capabilities. And so one of the very first things that most of our learners are asking about when it comes to AI is, where do I get started? How do I use this? What is relevant to me? So there's a lot that goes into talking to learners about how to best use AI as an assistant when you're trying to learn a skill or learn where to start, how to do really good prompts. You know, you were talking about those foundational skills that really help you use AI best. A lot of that starts with being able to write a really good AI prompt. But with all of this, and it's kind of like with automation or any major technological advancement that's happened, most people just want to try to find their place in it. Like, what? How is this going to help me specifically? Or how is it relevant to my job? And so one of the very first things that we do, and especially when it comes to like Cisco networking engineers or developers that are connected to Cisco, is really showing them how they can use AI in their job. You know, we have a tutorial on Cisco U. It's one of my favorite. It's called Generative AI and LLMs for the Network Engineer. And it's free. Anybody can take it. And it talks about AI in very specific terms around its relevance to a learner. So where we can really draw that straight line between what AI is and how it can help a specific individual do a task, that's really what makes a huge difference. And it also demystifies AI. It stops being this kind of amorphous technology that is seemingly changing everything. And instead, it really makes it more of what it truly is, as Dave said. It's a tool. It's a way to do things, you know, differently, faster, but it's a way to accomplish more in new ways.
Mm, very nice.
I'm going to add on to that a little bit, because you asked how do the learners feel about the AI and using AI. There is a fear factor. There always is, right? How's this, like Ryan said, how's this going to impact me? And that's really what we try to focus on. It's how do you leverage this, yeah, right? How do you use it to your advantage? What I see is I kind of see three groups of people when we talk about generative AI. When we talk about machine learning and AI, right, things around security and analyzing, et cetera, people get that. They understand that, how it's a tool. When we talk about the generative AI, that's where there's a little bit of a fear. And I get, let's say I group people into three buckets. The early adopters, all excited. Yeah, this is awesome. I can do great things. And they're willing to play and experiment and learn how to do the prompts. And they're willing to accept when they get something that's not quite right and say, oh, well, if that's because if I change my input, right? So those people who are, you know, that really excited about it. You have a class of people who are very fearful of it, right? How is this going to affect privacy? How is this going to, you know, there's all kinds of concerns. I'm sure you've, in all your other conversations that have, you know, come up around AI. One of my team members just said, look, it's a great tool, but it can impersonate me, right? So where's that protection for me? For my, right? He's a fantastic presenter, fantastic instructor. You don't want an AI who can replicate him and just read a script and people think it's him. So he embraces it, but he's concerned, right? And then there's a whole bunch of people who are, I'll just say, the late adopters, right? It's
they're coming.
They're waiting for everybody else to figure it out, and then they'll come on board. Okay, so that and we've seen this over and over and over in our history, where there's always a bunch of people who are excited, people who are interested, but concerned, and then a whole bunch of people who are just waiting to see what happens.
You know, when at the end of 2022, November, when ChatGPT becomes a thing, obviously AI has been existing for years before that. But absolutely, 2022 November, ChatGPT brings it to the consciousness of, you know, the mainstream, right? Is there a pressure amongst learning groups such as yours to be seen to be offering some type of, learning around AI. And I ask that because at some point, at least in the corporate sector, it almost felt as if, corporates across the board, whether you're a tech company or a retail company, a car company, you must say something.
Must have AI.
You must have AI in whatever you're talking about. On an analyst call or just a presentation or whatever it is, you must say the words AI somewhere inside there to show that, you are existing, in 2023, 2024, and now 2025. So from a learning point of view, did you guys ever feel, that type of pressure?
I'd actually say it's a little bit different when you're in a learning organization. Learning organizations are really reflective of like the skills of the moment or the skills of today. So as AI was starting to ramp up, our group was actually very interested in its effects, how generative AI might be utilized by a learner. And because we're Cisco, also, how would we be looking at something like AI infrastructure in a data center? So for us, again, it's kind of like being a journalist. A journalist is always like just right on the cutting edge, the bleeding edge, because you have to be curious if you're going to be in the news. That's why it's called the news. For us in the learning side, we have to be just on that bleeding edge in the same way. So when AI was starting to really hit that critical mass, we had already been exploring what we might be looking at from a topic-based perspective, like what type of subject matter should we be covering. We were looking at it from a technology perspective, especially in the context of Cisco's portfolio. And then finally, we were looking at it from a perspective of what new AI tools would we need to be able, like how were learner expectations going to change around AI? So thinking about things like AI-driven personalization, the ability for, in the exact same way that someone might use ChatGPT to say, teach me everything that you can about this subject, how could we also be looking at that? So for us, it was actually kind of like a natural path. And for any learning group that wants to stay relevant, you always have to be thinking of those next things. So even for us right now, I mean, we are always examining new technologies or advancements or potential changes that might be happening and making determinations on, is this something that we need to bring back to our learners?
Mm. Yeah. From Ryan hit it right. We have to be up front. Mm. We also have to maintain, right? Because we have all of those customers who are not yet moving, right? We have customers, who are two or three versions back on code and so on. So we have to maintain, but we also have to make sure they have the skills for the future. So what we've done actually is from our program that we're teaching, again, is what is relevant to you as an engineer. I would argue that the two biggest impacts in our field is on the data center and in security. Right? These where AI will be the most beneficial the quickest. They're already very beneficial. Mm-hmm. So we've added content, right? Again, going back almost 2 years ago, right. We launched content. We've actually, our Cisco Certified Network Associate, CCNA, on its last revision in 24, we included elements of AI. And it was, what do you as a, kind of an entry level network engineer need to know about AI and how it's going to impact things. So we've been thinking both about how and when to insert it into certifications. Learning comes first. Certifications is a little bit later, right? Because you have to learn it before you can prove yourself on it. But then also very much, how do we use it? Yeah. And we've been using it all the way back long before 22, around how do we optimize and so on. We're here for another meeting, and I shared a deck yesterday that we presented to them, to our partners in 2012, so 12 years ago. And I said, here, I had a picture, a drawing of how we could take content and make it very personalized and specific to an instance for a learner. And we were, at the time, the term people used for that was a knowledge service or knowledge management. It's still a term, right? But now it's, back then they talked about, could we have a knowledge management engine that would take our content and give an output that's customized based on context? That's essentially what an LLM is today. So I said, if you replace these words, so we've been looking and on this journey for not just us. I mean, we didn't invent this. It was in the learning field has been very much on this path. Yeah. Some of the terms have changed. Yeah. The tools have, you know, exponentially increased in their capabilities. But this is something that has been in the works in the learning organization for a very long time. No one on our team said, oh, I'm not so sure about this. So yeah, this is what we've been talking about forever. Mm-hmm. So, that two parts, the customers of the learning, we're trying to make sure they know what they need to know that is specific and relevant to their job. Mm-hmm. And on our side, how we use it to enable them. There's a tremendous amount of work going on there across every learning organization.
I guess that gives, you know, quite a bit of credence, you know, to what we were saying earlier on, that at least within the hard technical circles, you know, this type of thing has been thought about and has been explored and had been in the works for quite some time. It's just that when it comes to, you know, the attention of everyone, now everyone and their cat wants to be able to say the words AI, so, you know, we find ourselves there. I want to switch gears a little bit, you know, maybe stepping back from AI itself to just talk about the learning group. A couple of curiosities on my side. Firstly, right, you guys are a US company. Are your learners primarily from the US? And I ask that because you guys are global, you know. So what are the trends around where you guys are seeing demand for your certification?
So what I would say is we are a global company. Okay, with the U.S. headquarters, but also headquarters in other areas. From a certification specifically, right? Because that one, I know the numbers.
Yeah.
The U.S. is our number one market.
Okay.
Very, very close second, about 10% less, is India.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Japan is number third. You get into Western Europe is when you start getting others. But as you get into Europe and other countries, they're smaller, the smaller populations. So you would not expect the numbers to be as big. If we look at Latin America Latin America is an area, Sub-Saharan Africa is an area, Middle East, Europe, where I would say we're very strong in Asia. We're very strong in the Americas, Europe, Africa. We have a huge push here. I know you've had conversations with other people from Cisco on our efforts here, right? And that's one of the reasons why we're here. We see a large presence in our networking academies here, but that's people who are looking at tech fields, right? They're not, right? So that's in the 4.5 million globally this year, right? When we get into the professional or the career education, which is where I focus, Ryan covers both, but I focus on the career. It's a big push for us here. And I'm very, very proud to say one of our efforts that we launched with a partner here a little over a year ago, we had a well over 50% success rate on our expert level certification, right? The pass rates through the programs we did, part of it was around the analytics and the data collected on how they were progressing. I wouldn't say it's quite AI, maybe like more machine learning type analysis, but still it was a data-driven program to make sure they got to their outcomes. And it was the first time we've done this anywhere in the world. We piloted it here in Sub-Saharan Africa, and it was hugely successful. So there's a great interest. We get a lot of demand from the companies. There is a very large base of people coming in to tech fields which is fantastic. Yeah. And it's how do we now provide means for them to move up in their careers.
All right. On that point, you know, maybe since you deal with both, you know, the technical and the professional, what's the, because someone listening to us might think that it's only like the proper nerds that are sitting and having these types of, what do you call this?
Orion and I are proper nerds.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, yeah. We have the credentials.
Are there, do you guys, is the proportion of non-technical people, you know, that come for Cisco certifications, is it significant in any way? You know, maybe people that are just curious about a certain area and want a high level, you know, type of learning, or do you find yourselves just, you know, we are just focusing on the technical, you know, network professionals and, you know, security guys? Yeah.
Probably the best way to answer that question is to talk about a thing that we work on a lot through our NetAcad program, and of course through Cisco U as well too. But we love our tech curious audience.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be the Uber nerd. You don't have to be the already in the tech industry. You might just be someone who, you know, using AI as an example, we just came out with what we would like to call a literacy, like AI literacy program. It's a free course called Introduction to Modern AI. It's available on via our NetAcad program on netacad.com, and it's built for anybody. It's built for anyone who, you know, you see LLM and you think, what is that? Or you wonder, what is artificial intelligence? Or what is a neural network? It's built for someone who is, you know, just pre-career, someone who isn't even thinking about going into the tech industry. It could be someone who's already an expert and they're just trying to think about, oh, hey, I'd like to learn more about this subject. So we focus, in addition to all of the technical professional skills that we do, entry to expert, we spend a lot of time too in that literacy area where we're helping people build up skills, whether you're the tech curious or the tech expert, from literacy to fluency, how we can introduce topics to people in a very accessible way. In fact, I would say anybody who's listening right now that might be interested in just understanding modern AI and its effects around the world, check out our new course on that. It's amazing. It's incredibly accessible. It's also built for a non-technical audience. All of these changes that we see, whether it's digital learning or it's AI or it's how humans kind of engage with that ability to acquire a new skill, we're always trying to find ways to be able to meet learners around the world. If those learners end up becoming Cisco certified, great. If they end up becoming a CCIE, wonderful. But if they're just trying to find their place in that IT world, that's also a huge success for us as well. We really want to be able to be a road or a pathway to be able to learn and build those skills.
You know, the reason why I'm asking that specific pointed question was because when you talk to a lot of your IT and information systems types of divisions and roles, have come from being the support to sort of moving up the ladder across the world to being, you know, strategic, where you have a CTO, a CISO, or a CIO that are all, you know, now C-suite. But that's one person on your C-suite who sort of has to do a whole bunch of evangelizing, you know, for, I don't know, maybe SD-WAN or an edge networking center or something, right? And they have to communicate this to CEOs and to CFOs, right? So it's the closing the knowledge gap where the CEO doesn't really need to know, you know, how this edge data center that we're putting X amount of money is going to work, right? They just need to understand, why are we putting the money in? So you give them just enough knowledge so that they understand, okay, put the money in. It's going to do this for the business. 2 years from now, our calculations say we're going to make X return and it's going to improve maybe our customers' experience by X amount. So I've just been curious about how practically are organizations closing that knowledge gap, especially for those non-technical but important, decision makers that are there. Because if I'm an organization, I am sending my networking guys to come and get a Cisco certification, but I'm not sending my finance team to come get us.
So I'm going to give a very real world example.
Yeah.
Police department. They were rolling out new systems in all of their vehicles that were going to communicate back. Very deep technical knowledge needed by their IT team, their network team, right? So it's radio networks on, you know, IP networks over radio networks, and, you know, all kinds of concerns around interference of radio signals, et cetera, redundancy. It's a very, you know, building something that supports that is a fairly complex network. But they didn't say we need to train just them. They said everybody needs to understand cyber security fundamentals. You don't need to know how to stop attack, but you need to understand the impacts, the potential risks, and so on from a security perspective. So the entire force got trained in those fundamentals, that literacy, that cybersecurity literacy, and the core networking team got trained in a much deeper technical aspects. I would argue that if you don't have some level of technical knowledge, not that you can go and configure a router or that you can build an LLM, but if you don't have that literacy, that word I think is absolutely the best one we've been able to come up with. If you're not literate about AI, if you're not literate about security, you're going to be in trouble in this new world.
Yeah.
So where we look at, you know, for example, Netacad, that literacy, there's security content there that is relevant to everyone. Right. There is AI content that is not that you can go build an LLM, but that you understand, right? At least the fundamentals. That I think is the really important part. So we are teaching that. By the way, we also teach professional skills, right? So if you're not able to have that conversation, right? So if I'm the lead network architect, but I can't articulate why this is a good solution and what the ROI will be, I'm not going to be successful.
Yeah.
So in addition to the technical skills, we also teach those professional skills from Netacad up.
Mm. All right. Now, I think that helps us a little bit. And I think where we can end today's conversation is on 2 points related to this one. The first one is premised on the fact that all of this learning that we've been talking about throughout this hour that we've been talking is around careers and career projection, right? For someone who's outside of IT circles, they might not fully understand what this obsession is around these certifications. Maybe you could help to, you know, both of you could help to give some context around, I guess, the importance of certification and I guess how far certifications can actually take a person, either in their own business or in a career context.
Well, okay, I'll start. So I think there's multiple values to a certification.
Okay.
And the value is different whether you're the individual or a company that's hiring. For an individual, one thing it does for you is it gives you a map, right? It gives you a baseline of what is needed in a specific job. Okay, and Ryan talked earlier, we use a job role and job task analysis to build out our exam blueprints. Here's what you need to know. And there's so much content. There's so much to know. No one can master it all. So it gives you a plan to get the knowledge you need. And it gives you a proof point that you have attained that knowledge. And that's also the value for the employer, right? If there's 10 people applying and two of them are certified, I know they've got at least gone through a baseline learning journey to get that certification. So I know what skills they have. So it's an advantage on both sides. So that to me is the biggest reasons why certifications are needed. With our and most tech vendors, the certifications are not forever, right? You have to keep that knowledge. And that's the part where I really try to emphasize, especially with CCAs, is, oh, I'm a CCA, I'm at the top, I'm done. You're never done. So you have to recertify, you have to continuously learn, you have to continuously grow and adapt to all the changes. And that's only happening faster. And again, when we launched the new learning, and the certifications, that helps drive or guide you on what you need to know. Because we've gone out and done that analysis with hundreds or thousands of companies. We actually bring people in from that are hiring for roles into Cisco and ask them to help us build the blueprints. What do you need? Yeah. So that's to me the biggest value.
All right.
Yeah. The thing I'll add, and I'll echo first, that ability to differentiate yourself with something that is a third party validation of your skills is so critically important. When you're able to go to a potential employer as an individual and say, I have this certification from this body or from this organization or from this institution, it really speaks not only to the credentials that you possess, but to the fact that you have someone else saying, yes, this person knows that. To double down on that, it's also the issuer of those certifications. And it's one of the things that I feel like, Dave, I can speak for both of us, we're really proud of the Cisco certification program because it is seen so highly inside of the industry and all around the world. We have, we're ANSI certified. We are meeting all of the certification program itself meets a number of international standards. So that way we're able to not only issue those certifications, but have them aligned with the ability to say, this program itself is built off of a number of program elements that add a lot of rigor, which means that when you earn a Cisco certification, it's something that, we're not just giving those away. It really requires a specific amount of expertise to be able to have that added to your personal resume. So in addition to the fact that it can be this amazing differentiator and a pathway to be able to build your career, it's also great when you have a certification from a Cisco organization that really puts a tremendous amount of time, effort, and support into making a world-renowned program.
All right. I think that helps us to come to the end, because where I wanted to end off is to say that one of the realities when it comes to the certifications is that there's a cost component, right? Especially for the more professional ones, and which is why companies are the ones that tend to be the ones that pay for their staff to go and have these types of trainings. Strategically, and I guess as a learning group, how do you guys decide what is paid for and what is free? Because earlier on, for example, Ryan was talking about how you guys have the AI course that anyone can go and you're right. So how do you guys, I guess, weigh up what is free and what is paid?
So it's usually very, all of those decisions are incredibly deliberate. The first thing that I'll say is that we are always thinking about how we, again, can meet a learning audience where they're at. So, for example, when it's something like AI literacy skills, well, we know that everyone's going to need those. So we want to be able to go and position those out there. When we came out with the tutorial I was talking about, AI and LLMs for the network engineer, we knew those were very valuable skills to be able to provide to anyone that was in our network engineering community. as the learning and skills development becomes more complex, more complicated, that's where we start moving into learning that is at cost or premium, because we're starting to add in more hands-on or practical opportunities. You know, Dave was talking earlier about how what you want out of a great learning program is the ability to get hands-on. It's not just having concept and theory, but the ability to actually put that skill into practice. That's usually a threshold that we start to have that kind of moves that needle on what might be no cost or what might be premium. That said, we do offer no cost options, whether it's our Cisco modeling labs or even elements that are on Cisco U right now that can help someone, you know, get hands-on today. But when you start really building up those deeper technical skills that require a larger lab environment, or maybe even access virtually to hardware equipment, that's where we start seeing that kind of premium line. And of course, too, we kind of fit with a number of other standards that are held worldwide when it comes to certification, pricing, and, you know, what is that threshold, or what those prices are for exams, for example. But again, we always look to try to make the learning as accessible as we can. And then as that learning becomes more complex, that's when we start to move that into the more premium space.
Okay, cool. Anything to add here, Dave?
I will say that it's an ecosystem. Yeah. We're not a tiny team, but we're not a large team within Cisco, right? So for us to scale, we scale through partners and other things, right? So our certifications exams, for example, the associate professional and specialists are delivered to a partner called Pearson VUE. So that funding is actually to fund their operations to build out test centers globally, right? There's tens of thousands of test centers you can go take that exam. So when you're paying for an exam, you're not really paying. So you're paying a partner to have access to that testing facility and so on. So it's really about where the costs are. If we wanted to make that exam free, but rigorous, you know, supervised, right? So that we call it a high stakes exam, right? It has a high degree of integrity. We couldn't do that ourselves, right? If we could, we would, right? But we only have offices, so, you know, so many places. People can't travel to Johannesburg, for example, to take an exam if they're living in Cape Town or wherever. So that access to the partners to help to scale is really where, for every tech company, that is where the majority of the cost comes in. It's not about us making money. It's about us enabling people, but doing it through a partner ecosystem.
All right. That's where we end off today's discussion. It has been a really great one. And I think the overarching theme, you know, through today's conversation is probably an element of continuous learning. Yes. And also making sure that you have the foundations in place, you know, just so that you can be best equipped to make use of things like, you know, AI, and even in the world of cybersecurity, have that base before, you know, you get in there. Very, very good just understanding how Cisco's thinking about, you know, their own learning academy, which is now 30 years old. Obviously, people go to school and all of this stuff, but, you know, for a company that has its own ecosystem, I guess it made sense for them to actually make sure that they have their own certification, so that people within their partner ecosystem and their customers on the other side, you know, are taken care of, you know, in the best way. Also getting a keen sense of everything happening around all the AI debates, you know, what a learner is saying, some of the feedback from them to say, you know, please, where do I even begin? The universe is so vast. You know, help me, understanding that there are laggards in the market that are waiting for everyone else to get on board before they actually get in. And then, you know, all in that mix, there's also the ones that are just fearful, you know, of what's actually happening in this space. And also, I said continuous learning earlier, and it's something that, you know, Dave said, to say that it's never done. And, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, these certifications do seem to have an expiry date, you know, whether by circumstance or, you know, whether by reason, because whether Cisco tells you or not, the technology is moving forward. So, you know, you do need to keep yourself, you know, up to date. So that's been it. And I'm just remembering as I'm talking, there was a very great thing that Dave said to me yesterday, and I'm hoping that that's where we can end today's discussion properly. Dave, you gave an explanation yesterday about what it means to be an expert.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to be an expert?
So this is not Dave's explanation.
Of course, yes.
when I joined the learning group, it was to teach people how to become CCIEs. Yes. So I had 4 CCIEs at the time, and someone said, hey, you need to come and teach other people how to do this. But I didn't know what it meant to be an expert. And as a very curious person, I did a lot of research. And there is it's still available, the Cambridge Handbook of Expertise and Expert Thinking. And it's an analysis of hundreds of studies around learning and expertise across medicine, sports, technology, right? Lots of fields. And at the end, the professor who wrote this, who compiled all of this, he said that what it means to be an expert, there's 3 things. One is that you have domain knowledge. And that's the obvious one. Everyone knows that you're not going to be a network engineer without knowing something about networking. The second, and probably the most important, is you have the ability to form a mental simulation. And the sports analogy is the easiest one, right? Whether you're playing football or you're golfing, the term visualize your shot. Right, you're analyzing where all the other players are. If it's a team sport in golf, you're analyzing the wind, you know, the slope of the green and so on. So the ability to gather in all of the requirements, whether they're explicit requirements that you meet this ROI or whatever, or an implicit, if I do this, it's going to have this impact later, and synthesize them into a solution. So that mental simulation is critical. And the third attribute is that you have the ability to verify that what you've done is correct. So that is the definition from the Cambridge Handbook of Expertise.
And on that note, I don't think I'm going to add anything to that. It's a brilliant way for us to end off. Thank you so much. We're talking to Dave Mallory as well as Ryan Rose. They're both from Cisco's Learning Group. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.